Hi, my name is Brandon Lee, and this is the Championship Sportscast. I got Kempson and JT over in Montana recording live. This is going to be a fun show tonight. What do you guys think about the Pro Bowl snubs?
The Pro Bowl snubs, that's what we're going straight to. I mean, the game was decent. I mean, I watched most of it, and I watched the highlights afterwards. There were some really, really cool plays in it. Obviously, J.J. Watt was an absolute stud. Brent Grimes showed a lot of people why he is a premier cornerback in the NFL with a ridiculous pick in, I believe it was the third quarter. And it was fun. I mean, the uniforms are terrible, but I like the new fantasy draft format. I've liked that both years in the Pro Bowl. But the uniforms definitely need to change. But one of the things that made it really interesting was the narrow goalposts. I mean, that was a little bit of fun. You're shaking your head. You don't agree with that.
That's not called fun. That's called straight sadistic. Well, I mean, you've got Mr. Vinatieri out there missing flipping field goals as extra points. It's like,
oh, that's right. And they had the extra points that were, what, 30-some yards away?
Yeah,
like that.
They were back 15 yards, and the goalpost is short.
They learned, though. They started going for two-pointers.
Well, yeah, but the problem is still, though, is that those kickers are there not to look like, you know, idiots on national TV. They're the best at what they do, and yet you're making them look bad by making them miss extra points. Because if you notice, a lot of NFL kickers, they generally, when they kick an extra point, a lot of them aim for the corner. They don't kick it straight. They kick it kind of slanted
because everybody's going for
toward
the
corner. And so the problem is, as soon as you start shortening the goalposts, yeah, and they do that, and they miss, and then they look bad.
Okay,
this is supposed to be a showcase of your best talent, not making your best talent look bad.
Well, J.J. Watt's going to make your best talent look
bad. Well, okay, yeah,
going to do his
yeah.
best to make your best talent look
bad. Because the quarterbacks
but
had bad days in general because throwing
true.
Lots of picks.
Well,
jeez, Andrew Luck, second coming of Peyton Manning. Oh, let's throw an interception. Drew Brees, I think, threw one, and it was a bad day for quarterbacks around there. And then J.J. Watt's just J.J. Watt.
I know.
Is the reason he should, you know, showing again why he's the best player in the NFL and probably should win an MVP this year. But
well, he's the most valuable player, but Aaron Rodgers is probably MVP.
Okay, let's rephrase that. J.J. Watt is the best player and probably is more deserving this year than A-Rod of an MVP, but the Packers without A-Rod they're a team that maybe wins like four games without him. And so I understand why they want to give if Rodgers ends up winning the MVP, which a lot of people think he will, I understand why. But again, the problem is, though, J.J. Watt just put on a defensive season for the ages.
Well, yeah, and a similar thing can be said about J.J. Watt is the fact that the Texans were in the playoff hunt with Case Keenum starting as their quarterback, who was not on their roster until about the time Ryan Lindley got on the Arizona Cardinals roster. Actually, after that, even though Keenum did start a few games last year for them, so there was that familiarity, but all he really did was throw it to DeAndre Hopkins, and, nobody watched the game anyway, but if crazy scenarios happened and enough teams lost, we would have had Case Keenum taking on the third seed in the AFC. Would that be a Pittsburgh at that point? I think it was Pittsburgh. That would if the Ravens had lost, if there was a crazy scenario where J.J. Watt and the Texans, because J.J. Watt drove the Texans the entire to a 9-7 record.
But here's the only thing is that J.J. Watt on defense makes less of an impact than the quarterback does on what happens on the field, I think is the logic behind it.
Because, no, I understand
because
that.
Because even if the Texans didn't have J.J. Watt, their defense would still be okay, not quite as good. They wouldn't have the offensive tight end weapon that they have in J.J. Watt, and they don't have some of the other craziness that happens. But at the same time, it just doesn't make any – I just don't understand why you want to give it to Rodgers over J.J. Watt. I get it to an extent, and I'm a Packers fan, and I love Aaron Rodgers.
So do I.
But J.J. Watt, that man is a monster.
Yeah, he is.
Might be he's arguably one of the best players ever to play that position.
Yep.
And he's a pretty dang young player.
Well, Justin Houston is good in his own right. He almost broke the sack record as well, and he just wasn't nearly as publicized because – for whatever reason, maybe it was because he was on the Chiefs or, but he had a season where he was like a sack short of Michael Strahan's record. And, of course, insert your Brett Favre jokes here. But, I mean, that is what it is, and it's pretty dang good.
Yeah. Well, if we want to, I don't
know. Let's talk about the guys that missed the Pro Bowl that probably should have been in it.
Probably, or for sure should have
definitely
been.
Definitely should
for
have
example,
been.
For example, Philip Rivers, who was an MVP candidate for the first month of the season, and he got snubbed.
Fletcher Cox should have been
Dalton.
There.
That's defensive Dalton lineman got for the in. Eagles. Yeah. Dalton did get in. Andy Dalton
did not deserve it. If before
he threw 17 interceptions. Why does he deserve to get in?
Well, it's the same thing I keep arguing about over Jameis Winston and his interception numbers. People don't seem to care. They seem to be the hot story at the moment, so it increases their stock with everything.
Not the same thing. Well, Andy Dalton. No, the thing with Andy Dalton is he is average. If your quarterback is better than Andy Dalton as an NFL quarterback, then you're better than average. If you're worse than Andy Dalton, you need a new quarterback.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed. But
or need to develop beyond that point,
I guess,
obviously.
The few other guys that I see that were huge, huge snubs were Matt Forte, who had a great year.
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand. As much as I like Mark Ingram, and he's a good guy, and he's a great running back, Matt Forte, I think, had a way better season.
I would agree with you there.
You know, he had an amazing
season. He was the lone bright spot on – pretty much on Chicago because their defense has been a catastrophic dumpster fire for 2 years.
Well, him and,
at least. Maybe since Urlacher left.
That rookie corner or defensive back they had.
That is true.
Fuller was good. For a little while. And yes. He's a bright spot. That team, I think, has some potential. But the thing
they do.
Matt Forte should have probably made it. I see Khalil Mack should have probably made it, especially being a rookie. He had a monster year for the Raiders. I mean, there were some other pretty big ones, I think, that got – I mean, there were some arguments that could have been made.
And some of these snubs that we're looking at right here actually did eventually make it, Justin Forsett being one of them. Antoine Bethea was in there. He had a pretty good year. And obviously some of the snubs made the Super Bowl, so they can't play the game. But that's part of the drama, I guess, of the new system, and just in general, is it's at least it's talking points for us, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and it's just the problem is though is that it's like you want to recognize the best players in the league, and I think having a hard cap on the amount of players that can be from a position in the Pro Bowl is a little bit of a problem, or at least putting a cap on it, because like some of these guys like had great years, and it's just like why do we have to say that. You know, well, we're going to cap the amount of people we're going to let into the Pro Bowl, you know, and just say simply that we're going to let only a certain amount of you in, even though it's going to cut some guys that had great Pro Bowl-worthy seasons out of the picture. And I just see it that they maybe should, you know, let them in anyway. If the nominating committee thinks that you had the best – you know, had a good enough
the
year
fan
to make
vote,
it,
yeah,
ball, you should yeah. just you should just make it, and okay. that should. Because there are several guys that probably should have made the Pro Bowl that didn't.
Derek Carr had a better statistical season than Andy Dalton did.
Yeah, he shouldn't have made it, though.
I know.
He has a bright future ahead of him, and he's going to succeed if they get him elite weapons and just some help, because as he develops further down the road. But as far as just the Pro Bowl in general, it's – The way they do it now, it gives the fans a lot of power, and that's part of the appeal to it. They're trying to appeal to the fans in that way, and that we can debate the merits of that, but I think it's pretty clear that you don't like that.
Well,
are we trying to go towards like a BCS type system
let's put it this way.
Take Pro Football Focus stats and just
all
like
I'm, all I'm help. Saying is you have a fan vote, but you also have a nominating committee too that you say, well, these guys didn't get the fan vote. You have a pool of them of all the guys that don't make it.
Okay.
You separate out all the elite players and figure out which ones, even though they didn't win the fan vote or didn't win something else, had good enough years to be Pro Bowl worthy. Hmm. You might end up with a few more players at certain positions, but that's not a problem. Just because the fact of the matter is that you need to have guys that deserve to be there, being there and getting recognized for it, you know, because there's this year in particular, look at the running backs. There were so many great running backs in the NFL this year, and a lot of them should have had Pro Bowl seasons but didn't make it.
Well,
so,
really, yeah.
So, and the problem is the other thing is that with this fan vote, look at what happened in the NBA. You have Kobe Bryant gets voted to start over some of these guys.
And Kyle Lowry gets to start over Kyle Korver.
Well, Lowry's a bona fide superstar, and I would argue is a better player probably overall. So the thing is here, though, is that Korver is good, but he is not the primary player on that team. On the
okay,
and that's
what a transition, guys.
Well, we'll get to that.
We were supposed to talk to NBA.
Well, no, my point was that you have fan votes. It's going to be the most popular players are going to get in because Kobe should not have even made the damn All-Star game under shooting below 40%, barely playing most of the games in the season. He did not deserve to make it. Period, especially coming out of the West, where guards that should make – I can come up with a list of guards that deserve to be there that is a mile long. Klay Thompson, he made it, though, I'm 90% sure.
He did.
Klay Thompson, James Harden, Steph Curry, mm-hmm. Damian Lillard.
Those guys are point guards.
Guards. They don't – in the NBA All-Star game, it's done by guards. There is no point guard shooting guard. List. It's just guards. So
okay.
You have Curry. You have there's all these guys in especially in the West where it's like one of the biggest stacked point guard divisions or conferences. There's so many good ones, and then you're like, well, let's just give it to Kobe. Well, that's not how this works. There are guys that James Harden could win the NBA MVP right now. And Kobe gets voted to start over him. Kobe's nowhere even in that conversation. And if you're looking at football, it's the same thing. The fans are just going to vote for who's popular. I love Clay Matthews, but he didn't have as good of a season as some of these guys, like Fletcher Cox and some of these other defensive players. Clay Matthews didn't have that great of a – he had a great season, but he didn't put up the sack numbers because he was playing inside linebacker for a good part of the year. But the point is, though, is – there are players that had better years than him, and he still makes it ahead of them.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a problem because of the fans.
And that's why I ask about maybe setting up kind of a – like BCS is what comes to – just leaps to my mind as far as how to kind of integrate some of the data that's being used so abundantly now from the pro football focuses of the world. Would that be an option? I mean, maybe that's something to look to at a later date. But as far as just moving ahead with our program here, you talked about Kobe, and he's going to be out for the year now with shoulder surgery. And I'm sure you have an opinion on that.
Time to hang it up, Kobe.
Oh.
I agree, but he won't. He actually announced that he will be coming back for next season.
He's hinting at it. It's from my understanding, there is a lot of talk that Kobe might end up retiring. That is kind of the big theory, is that Kobe will end up retiring at the end of the year for a couple of reasons. First off, it depends on how well this surgery goes. And second, he can't put up that production for that kind of money that he needs, so he might just retire to get that money off the salary cap so the Lakers can get somebody good. Because the thing is that I can't think of any good free agents the Lakers want next year. There's a few of them. Goran Dragic is one that comes to mind, and he's one of the three guards set they run out in Phoenix. He's good. There's a few other players, but the thing is the Lakers need to start getting pieces, and if Kobe's around, that's not going to happen. They need to do something. So if Kobe retires, that helps. The other big rumor with him, though, is that the shoulder injury he might be having, that it could all be a ruse, is another huge rumor that's going around, which I don't necessarily believe. I actually do believe he's legitimately injured, and I think he's been playing with it for most of the year, which explains his really poor shooting percentage. Because I play a lot of basketball, and when you get hit in the shoulder and it hurts and you're having shoulder pain, it's hard to shoot the ball well. And that's all there is to it.
Hard to do anything when your shoulder hurts.
Yeah, it's hard to do anything. And so I believe that Kobe, is hurt. But the rumor is that basically he isn't hurt and they needed an excuse to shut him down the rest of the year so the fans don't get pissed off and start burning bridges. Because the thing is that the Lakers are a lot like the Yankees are. They're built – they do one thing and their fans expect one thing, them to win. And the Lakers suck right now and they're going to lose this huge – in what I call a bandwagon fan base, because when they're not good, they bail, is that you have to – they have to do something to try and keep the, you know, the Kobe lovers on board and keep all these people happy.
Well, and when the Lakers are good, the NBA is good. That's – I mean, when the Lakers were good just one or two years ago, like whenever you would turn on ABC on a Sunday afternoon, it would be – more than likely the Lakers, whether they were playing in Staples Center or they were playing the Celtics or playing an Eastern Conference foe, it was the Lakers, because the Lakers, the Celtics help the – it helps when the Celtics are good. Celtics are bad right now. And I'm not saying the league is terrible because of this. I'm just saying that most of their big traditional powers are kind of on a downturn right now. And it's would you say it's hurting the league?
I don't say it's hurting the league. I think – the thing is right now is, though, is that what's hurting the league is not that the Lakers are bad necessarily. It's that all of the classic teams seem to suck
right.
really bad. Because right. the Lakers, while they're bad, they're still helping the NBA because they still have Kobe. They still are the most valuable franchise in the entire NBA. They just put out numbers, I think Forbes did last week, that the Lakers are still the most valuable franchise. So
the thing is
right now is that they still have the big market. They're still a draw, because if you flip on TV and stuff, the Lakers are on a lot and they stink. And I mean, but the thing is, though, is that for three and half a quarter, they are really competitive, and then they just choke. So that's kind of part of it, is you're watching three quarters of an extremely competitive game, regardless of who they're playing. Regardless. But the thing is that then you've got Boston, who sucks.
Right.
The Knicks suck.
Yep.
And it's just like, well, the Cavs for the longest time sucked. And the Cavs, not that they're a winning franchise, but they're big because Mr. LeBron James mm-hmm. is on that team.
Which they're getting – they're.
But they're on a 7-game win streak.
Exactly.
LeBron's averaging 30 points a game. Mm. Eastern Conference, beware. Here come the Cavs. Big freaking shocker there.
Right.
Yeah, as we talked about last week.
Yeah, the league isn't in a bad spot because the Lakers are bad or because all the classic teams are bad.
Right.
They're in an okay spot because you have a lot of young superstars that are taking over as well. Anthony Davis is huge. Everybody loves Kevin Durant. Russell Westbrook is a huge draw. James Harden, Curry, Chris Paul, Damian Lillard, Blake Griffin, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. John Wall. You know, there's a lot of really solidly good players.
Bradley Beal.
That are bringing people – not so much Bradley Beal.
Not so much.
Well, he's good, but he's not the draw. Because each team generally, unless you're the Clippers or like the Bulls or Cleveland, only generally has that one guy that like – you know is the draw for that team. Mm-hmm. And John Wall is certainly that player for the Wizards. John Wall is a straight stud this year and is just being a monster. There's a lot of really good players and a lot of young talent that are driving people in to pay attention. And I actually know that coming from an FCS school, there is a lot of people, which is what we consider our basic section of college basketball, even though it refers to football. Most of us see it as, you know, we're still an FCS school when it comes to basketball too, because we still play most of the schools that are in our FCS division. So the thing is, though, is that we have a player that comes from a small school that we used to play up in Big Sky Conference and a lot of different places, that in Damian Lillard, that's come out of nowhere from a small school that has taken the NBA by storm.
Right, right, right.
That's getting a lot of people are like, wow, I watched this guy play in college. I've never seen an NBA player come out of, you know, a small school that I actually got to watch. So that's been huge.
Yep.
There's been a lot of things that are helping.
Yeah. Well, then that's good. And one of the kind of second tier, I guess, all-stars would be like Klay Thompson, who had a huge 37-point explosion in the third quarter of the game late last week. And that that was something else. That and it was right around the anniversary of Kobe's 81. Not that I'm comparing the two, but that was interesting timing. And but another thing that happened over the weekend was Mr. Coach K got his 1,000th win. And he
Coach 1K now.
Coach 1K for now, yes. And I fully expect him to get another win within the week. But
well, they play Notre Dame is their next game, and that game's gonna be tough. Mm. Notre Dame's ranked number 8 right now, Duke's number 4. Be a good game. It's gonna be a battle.
Yeah.
Because Notre Dame, I think, if I remember correctly, was leading Virginia, who's the number 3 ranked team right now. Up until about the last 5 minutes and lost it.
Oh, okay.
So you be aware of Notre Dame that they could.
What was that score again?
I don't know what the final score was. I just know they were leading going into 5 minutes and left and lost. I don't get to watch every single college basketball game.
No, yeah. But the reason I do say that is just because he's got a winning percentage that he's won almost 3/4 of the games that he's coached as a head college basketball coach. And a few of those years were at Army, but most of them have been at Duke. I remember him as Duke. He's been the coach of Duke forever, especially from my perspective. And he's a legend. He's a living legend. It's an honor to watch him on the hardwood, at least for me, with his four national championships?
Yeah.
And there's a laundry list of accomplishments that he's done, and this is just another trophy on his mantle.
Well, the thing is here too is that Coach K has been winning basketball games since before there was a 3-point line. And there was before there was a shot clock, and he's still winning games. I mean, he had two real kind of rough years at Duke where they had a losing record, and he almost got fired, but they stuck with him, and now you've got the guy I argue is the best basketball coach currently coaching in any level of basketball anywhere. And that's because the thing is that the NBA might be a lot faster and you need better players to be good in the NBA. The thing is, though, is that in college, you aren't going to have everybody being good unless you're Kentucky this year, which is just crazy. Because Kentucky, I think their lowest recruit is ranked like 25th in the nation when he came out. Mm. So that's pretty wild. Like, that team is stacked, and that's all there is it. But when
they have 13 McDonald's All-Americans, which is more than the L.A. Lakers.
Their problem is that in college, you have to not only get good players, which is hard, but you have to find a system that's going to work and continue to win. The thing is, and Coach K's continued to do it in different eras and has been constantly good. And just been a great coach. If you were to move him up to the NBA, I'm sure he would probably, which he has more or less has because he's the coach of Team USA, both the Olympic team and the FIBA team, and they've had immense success since he took that job. Mm. He is an incredible coach, and there is no doubt in my mind that I think he is the best currently coaching basketball coach on the planet. The only other guy that you could make an argument that's still alive would, in my opinion, is Phil Jackson. But that's, that's arguing semantics at this point.
And you won't get a dissenting argument from me on that. And so you mentioned the international aspect of Coach K. And he, again, that's another thing he's done for as long as I can remember, is he's been coaching our international basketball as well. UFC went international on Saturday night with UFC on Fox 14. From Sweden, Stockholm, Sweden, correct? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So tell us a little bit about that. I think you're the only one who was able to catch it.
Can I start?
Honestly.
Can I start?
Sure, go for it.
The prelims were very entertaining. I did not get to watch the main card because my TV crapped out on me, but I did see that there was a little bit of controversy on the main card. The prelims was pretty much just knockout city. We saw Amir Khani knock out Andy Ogle in 7 seconds. The official says it's 8 seconds, but it was 7 seconds. And then Nikita Krylov choked out Nedkov with a submission choke in the first round. It was basically just Finnish Central, and it was very entertaining throughout. And I don't really see any of those having an impact on the rankings at all. But the main card was also interesting. How about that, JT?
Well, let's backtrack for a minute to the prelims. That guy that secured that knockout in 8 seconds, that one's a little bit on the controversial end. There's actually a lot of people out there arguing the fight got stopped early. I've seen it, and I think
– Joe Rogan said that too.
Yeah, I thought it was stopped fine, but there are a lot of people out there that are like –
I agree.
He was kind of – and given what happened in the main card, which we'll get to in a second, I actually am going to kind of stick in the middle that it was kind – I could see it being an early stoppage because the guy could have been fighting back. I saw it, and I was like, well, it was fast. I don't know. It was an okay stoppage. It wasn't great. Time to stop it. It could have gone a couple seconds longer, but it doesn't matter. The big thing that happened, I guess, is on the main card, you had the first fight, Sam Cecilia versus Akira Korasani. Sam Cecilia floored Akira Korasani with a pretty hardcore punch, knocked him out with about 3 minutes into 3.5 minutes into the first round, and Akira Korasani is probably going to retire. He basically did, more or less. He basically said, my mind doesn't want to do this anymore. So he's probably going to retire. Ryan Bader versus Phil Davis was not the fight I was expecting. I was half expecting it to be a really good fight, but it was just kind of okay. They both guys landed their shots. Ryan Bader closed Phil Davis's eye, which is what I think won Ryan Bader that fight, because I thought Phil Davis, without that injury, won 2 rounds. But because of how visual damage often basically leaves an impact on the judges, I think that's ultimately what did it. But it was a razor-thin decision going to Ryan Bader. It was a close, close fight. And then
fighters, I think these days should just go for elbows because the judges, you know, they look at the physical damage and they think that's the win, and a lot of fans apparently think that as well because of the Johnny Hendricks fight.
GSP did beat Johnny Hendricks and looked like a flipping mess afterwards. And, I mean, Frankie Edgar's won't – I mean, up until the Benson Henderson and Jose Aldo streak of him not being able to win a stupidly close decision, which two of those fights is basically a consensus against Benson that he should have won both of them. Is basically the general consensus, it seems like. But it's just that you get guys in there that get really beat up and hurt, so it just kind of depends on the judges. But when you get a decision that's that close, that then you have visual damage actually does take effect, because then you can see the damage of their punches, because both guys landed a similar amount of strikes. It was too close to call. And that's what I think – that's when the edge – really kind of mattered.
Let's talk about someone who is not going to be retiring here. How about Dan Henderson?
Let's get to that in a second.
Okay.
Let's start with Anthony Johnson defeating Alexander Gustafsson.
Can I just cut in right here? Because I was on Twitter just before this fight started, and it was like, oh yeah, this is going to be a great fight. Main event is up next, da-da-da-da-da. And literally seconds later, I get just this flood of Anthony Rumble Johnson is an absolute stud, and just it was Rumble Johnson was just getting a lot of talk up just after the fight. Was it that?
Well, let's slow down and talk about the fight before we start talking about what happens after the fight.
All right. I'm just saying the reaction was something.
Yeah, the first minute or so, give or take a little bit, was pretty competitive. Both guys were getting in, landing some shots. And then Gus poked Anthony Johnson in the eye. It gets stopped for a couple seconds to let Anthony Johnson's eye kind of recover. And then they go to touch gloves afterwards. Gus throws a kick. It misses, and Johnson just wallops him. Hits him just square and just hurts him real bad and chases him around for a second. Gus ends up hitting the canvas, and Johnson finishes him. And Johnson hits like a truck. Like, that was the one thing everybody knew coming into this fight, that's what Anthony Johnson does. He hits you and you do not get up. And Gus
got
caught.
That was what I gathered from the reaction.
Gus got caught. And Anthony Johnson, I've known for a Anthony Johnson caught Alexander Gustafsson, and that's all there is to it. Gus got caught. Johnson beat him pretty handily afterwards, but Gus got caught. So I was like, my first reaction is Anthony Johnson is a bad, bad man. And I say that because I think he's going to beat John Jones. And that's because he hits like a truck, which is like DC hits like a truck. There's a bunch of guys John Jones has fought that hit like trucks. But the thing is that you have a guy now that just beat the guy that beat John Jones that has a very similar style. That because Gus and John Jones have a very similar like stand-up style. So Anthony Johnson, the hype is real in terms of him beating John Jones. Because he's a very bad matchup because he's a big guy that's got he's got reach, he can hit him, and if he connects, John Jones is in a lot of trouble. John Jones has a great chin. He does, because Gus hit him a couple of times pretty solidly. He's been hit before and has a pretty good chin. But Johnson hits like no other man ever. But in that division, I think, anyway. He hits really hard.
The shortest fight of the main card was Gegard Mousasi defeating Dan Henderson.
The thing is that there was some controversy now surrounding this Anthony Johnson thing, is because now people think, well, there might have been a headbutt involved.
Oh.
So the headbutt, it looks like they clock heads. And the reason I say it looks like there might have been a headbutt is I did Taekwondo for 8 or 9 years of my life, like for a long time. I know that every once in a while you're going to clack noggins when you're sparring, when you're fighting, whatever. That happens. It's part of the game, is that you're going to clack heads. Things are going to happen. And, you know, it looks like that happens here. The thing is, though, Johnson definitely hits him with a hand, lands a very solid punch and the headbutt, but not intentionally. It was clearly just like he leaned in and got him as he was throwing a punch. The thing is...
Yeah, I think my view on it is that it was insignificant and unintentional. So I don't think he should be penalized, or I don't think the win should be taken away from him.
Well, the thing is, though, it wouldn't knock a guy out or hurt a guy that bad with a headbutt. Because you're going to hit him... The thing is that you're going to hit a guy...
Wouldn't you hurt yourself more so than anything?
No, you both kind of get hurt equally. But the thing is you're going to hit him on the forehead. There's a reason I don't generally, when you fight, you don't punch a guy in the forehead. You might throw elbows at his forehead to try and cut like his, you know, above his eyes open. But you're not going to punch a guy in the forehead. Clocking heads there is just going to – you're both going to feel it and it's going to hurt.
Right.
But it's not going to make a difference. The punch hit him on the ear, one of the worst places to get punched. That is going to drop you, especially with how hard Rumble hits. Oof. So it – So in my opinion, it doesn't really matter. It's a moot point. Gus got caught. He'll be fine. If they ever fight again, Gus could beat Johnson. That's like I still hold that to be true because Gus got caught, especially in the first round. If you get, you know, if the fight's kind of even and then you just get caught, that doesn't really say who's the better fighter, other than the fact that Johnson has the weapons and the skills to beat Gus and has the weapons and the skills to beat John Jones.
So we talked about how the
Yeah, I don't know that he will beat John Jones, though. I think John Jones, he's a little bit craftier than Gustafsson.
If you know, the thing is, he has the tool set to do it. That's what's important. Because the thing is that John Jones, everybody, and a lot of people see him as this unstoppable force of some sort. The thing is that he's not. You know, he is human just like everybody else. Anderson Silva got beat. There's been... All the great fighters eventually get beat. And the thing is that you get up a guy that's going to be a bad matchup for him, like Anthony Johnson will be, because John Jones can knock guys out. He has some knockout power. But the thing is Anthony Johnson has more knockout
power. Yeah, but even John Jones admitted to the media at one point in time that he doesn't have knockout power. He says that he prefers just to stand on the outside and pick people
apart.
Well,
the thing is, though, is that John Jones might have said that, but as I remember correctly, he knocked out Shogun to get the belt. So he has the power to do it. And the thing is to get a TKO or to get a knockout, you don't necessarily have to have knockout power. You have to hit the guy just right. You have to hit him in the body. That can make a guy quit. That can get a TKO. There's lots of things you can do. And John Jones can hit probably pretty damn hard. He's got the tools to beat somebody. But the thing is, Anthony Johnson has way more knockout power than John Jones and is going to come in and is going to look to stand and bang with him, which the problem is...
Anthony Johnson broke the former UFC heavyweight champion's jaw. His jaw was hanging off in the World Series of Fighting.
Anthony Johnson's no slouch when it comes to punching. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, he broke several teeth in his face and it's crazy. This guy has insane knockout power, and he can knock out anyone that he wants to.
But anyway, all controversy aside from that fight, let's get to the big controversy. Gegard Mousasi at middleweight beat Dan Henderson at 110 in the first. One of the worst stoppages I have ever seen in my life. Absolute worst. Henderson kind of, I don't know if he got poked in the eye or caught a punch, but Gegard starts pointing at it and trying to tell the ref that he needs to stop the fight.
I did hear about that.
Because Henderson's eye kind of had a little bit of blood in it, and it was, I don't know, it was a little weird. I don't know how that occurred. I still have not figured that out yet. But the big thing that happened was Henderson starts to...
Fighters like to bait the ref into stopping the fight early.
Well, sometimes it works. Gegard and Henderson clearly have a lot of respect for each other, and that became clear after the fight that Gegard actually said, I'm worried about him because he's getting up there a little bit, and I don't want to end his career because that would be awful, is basically what he said. But what ends up happening is Henderson pushes forward to try and get the ref to not stop it, comes in, throws a couple punches, and then gets clipped, and then kind of loses his balance, falls down. Gegard chases him, lands a pretty good punch, and then the fight suddenly gets stopped. And the thing about it is Dan Henderson, as the ref goes to step in, actually grabs Gegard's leg and pulls him down and ends up in top position as the ref goes to pull them off.
Yeah, Dan Henderson knows how to evade those fight-ending punches. Like, you know, he did that against Fedor Emelianenko in Strikeforce, where Fedor looked like he was going to end that fight, and then he grabbed his leg, pulled out from behind, and then started landing knockout shots.
Well, and the thing is, but the ref stopped it way early, and everybody's like, Dan Henderson needs to retire. Well, assuming his eye's okay, which we still don't have any real news on, if his eye is okay, he will be back, hopefully, unless he just decides he doesn't want to do it anymore, because this is, like, I think his fifth loss out of the last six fights, give or take, so he's not in the best spot right now, but I think he'll be back. But the thing is, I think his next win, whoever it's over, should be his last fight. He should go out on top. He's proven anything that he could possibly prove. No offense, Dan Henderson, but you don't have the tools to beat Chris Weidman. You don't have the tools anymore to beat Luke Rockhold and Jacare and some of these the higher-ranked guys in the middleweight division, because that's where he's sitting. And Dan Henderson certainly, I don't think, could beat John Jones because he's not long enough to catch him. Because the thing is that if Dan Henderson could hit John Jones, it'd be all over. And it's the same thing that goes with anybody, but I just don't think he's going to catch him.
Yeah. John Jones doesn't really let people have a clear punch at him. But, you know, I don't know why the UFC wants to keep him around. I mean, unless it's the Kobe Bryant thing or Derek Jeter thing. Like, he's a legend, you can't cut him.
Who's this? Dan Henderson?
Well, the UFC can do whatever they want, and they're going to do whatever they want. They've cut other champs or other... you know, formerly great guys before. They cut John Fitch. They've cut some other guys before, too.
Yeah, John Fitch. He was, I guess he was past his prime because he just got tapped out by
Usmar. Well, he was good, though. The thing was that he was a fan and well-liked and was a great fighter, and they cut him.
Yeah, but they cut him because he was boring, I guess. And the same thing with Jake Shields, too.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing is that Dan Henderson... That fight with Gegard wasn't that entertaining. It was, even though it was over in a hurry. But the thing is, though, is that they're going to do what they're going to – if they want to cut him, they're just going to cut him. Him sticking around has nothing to do with him being as good as he is. It has to do with the fact that he's still ranked and that they're not just going to cut him because he's still ranked. He knocked out Shogun.
Why is he still ranked? Why is what? He? But Shogun shouldn't be ranked either. How many fights has he won in his last five fights?
Well, the thing is, though, Shogun's also probably going to be a Hall of Famer, and I think he's still ranked. Point being, Henderson is ranked. You're not just – because you lose to a top 10 opponent does not mean you should get cut. If you lose to a bottom 10 opponent and you lose, then you should get cut. Gegard is top 10. If not, in my opinion, probably top 5 because he is really good. So, but
okay.
Anyway.
How about UFC 183?
Someone who didn't get cut but was out of it for a while and is making his return this Saturday in Vegas, Anderson Spider Silva. It is in Vegas.
You sure?
Yeah, yeah. It is. It is.
No, I have one job. It's to set you guys up.
No, the Chris
on this one.
The Chris Weidman fights in Staples Center, and I got the two mixed up.
Oh, okay.
Anderson Silva, Nick Diaz. I don't know. This fight is either going to be really good or over in a hurry or really boring because there's like the really good thing is these two could look to stand and bang, and or they could have a really interesting grappling war. That could be really cool too. But the thing is, I just don't think Nick Diaz has the tools to beat Anderson Silva. There's going to be a lot of trash talking going on because that's what both of those guys do really well. Really, really, really well. And that's the thing is that Anderson Silva's game for years has been he has to get into their heads. It's why he lost to Chris Weidman twice. Granted, the leg break was slightly
influential.
Well, it was a factor, but the thing is, though, is that Chris Weidman's not afraid of Anderson Silva. He was winning that fight regardless of what happened. Weidman is Anderson Silva's kryptonite because Weidman is like a kid in a candy shop. You don't get into his head because he's in his own head because he's out there doing what he loves. He knows he's confident in his skills. He knows what he's doing, and he doesn't second guess himself. And the thing is that Silva's trash talking and taunting couldn't get in his head. Nick Diaz does the same thing. Both of them two guys, that's what they do. There is going to be trash talk, I almost guarantee it. And that could be an entire fight of just the two trash talking and never throwing a punch. Won't happen, but the point is that could happen. It could just be boring or it's going to end really quickly because Anderson Silva will probably knock him out.
Two questions. What had you shake in your head?
I don't remember now.
Okay.
I think it was that he said that Nick Diaz doesn't have the tools. Oh, and then I also said they haven't trash talked so far. And Anderson Silva says that he respects Nick Diaz. And Nick Diaz decided he doesn't want to trash talk Anderson Silva. And another thing that I wanted to add is that not even Anderson Silva kissing Chris Weidman could get in his head.
Well, yeah, no, it's just that the thing is with Anderson Silva, he might respect a guy. There's no doubt he respected Chris Weidman before he got in the ring with him.
Oh, yeah, he definitely respected him a lot.
Anderson Silva is not a guy that is like – that doesn't respect the guy he fights. Anderson Silva – the only guy I think Anderson Silva might not have ever respected to an extent might have been Chael Sonnen. Might. But the thing is, Anderson Silva is a smart man, and if you listen to him talk, he knows how good these fighters are. He understands it. It's just been his game because he could beat them striking, but he finds it easier for him to go in there and get in their heads because then he can pick them apart. And Nick Diaz might not have been talking trash before the fight, but the thing is I don't think I've ever seen him or his brother, for that matter, in the ring never talking trash because they have to, because it's like their thing is they have to get into people's heads and make them make a mistake because they don't. The Diaz brothers are really good grapplers. They have okay hands. They have decent boxing, but their strength is on the ground. They have to get the other guy to make a mistake and get it to the ground.
Okay, I think so both guys have elite striking, though. I think that Anderson Silva has elite kickboxing. I think the Diaz brothers have great boxing. I think that's why Nick Diaz stands a chance in this fight, and I think they will stand and bang.
Diaz, the thing is, though, he does not have elite level boxing as far as I'm – he might be okay. He might be a decent stand-up fighter, but Anderson Silva is elite. Because, I mean, look what he did to Vitor Belfort. Knocked him out with a head kick. He's knocked – you know, Anderson Silva is a great kickboxer and a great striker. If you look at other great strikers, John Jones, George St. Pierre, Anthony Pettis, Frankie Edgar, Jose Aldo, Demetrius Johnson. I can keep going here. The thing is that – Diaz is probably a pretty good boxer. He's good. He's decent. He's workable. The point here being, though, that he's not at that elite level that Anderson Silva is at. That is kind of the point, is that there is a huge gap between Anderson Silva, GSP, all those guys, and everybody else.
All right.
But how about Kelvin Gastelum versus Tyron Woodley, winner gets a title shot?
I call BS that winner gets a title shot. You're forgetting about a little guy named Rory McDonald, who is patiently waiting for a title shot. He will get a title shot, as will probably Johnny Hendricks get a rematch with Lawler before either of them.
Yeah, but no, because Dana White said that winner gets a title shot.
I still call BS. Dana White might say that, but he also told Cub Swanson the same thing. And basically the intimation was that if Frankie Edgar beat Cub Swanson, he would probably get a title shot. And then Conor McGregor showed up.
And by the way, people can say whatever they want.
Yeah, Dana does it to draw up hype for fights.
Okay, but how about Ally Aquinta versus Joe Lozon? Why does that fight deserve to be on the main card and not Miesha Tate versus Sarah McMahon? Two women that have both fought Rousey.
Well, Sarah McMahon and Miesha Tate, their theory is that Miesha Tate's a huge draw that'll get a lot of people to watch the prelims. Because the thing is that the UFC makes a lot of money off their pay-per-views, and those fights that are on the pay-per-view are going to be pretty damn good fights. It's just that Miesha Tate, Sarah McMahon is probably going to draw people to watch it because Miesha Tate has a connection to Ronda Rousey, who is the biggest. I'm sorry, Conor McGregor, you might be a big draw, but you are not Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey is the biggest draw the UFC has, and they are going to milk any connection to Ronda Rousey. You know, for the next thing is, well, Cain Velasquez appeared in a commercial with Ronda Rousey. So that, I mean, that's, it's the thing is that Ronda Rousey is the biggest thing in MMA right now. And they're going to use anything they can to get people to see and watch fights. So it will probably be enough to get more people to watch the prelims. Because a lot of people are going to watch the main card regardless because of Anderson Silva.
And Nick Diaz. But here's another one. Tim Bosch versus Talis Leitches. Does Tim Bosch leave town if he loses to Talis Leitches?
Probably. I think he lives somewhere else.
No, I mean if he loses this fight, does he get cut from the promotion? Does he get cut from the promotion?
When was the last time Tim Bosch lost, or who he's been fighting, and what is? Because
he hasn't won a lot.
He's been always pretty decent.
Well, he's on the main card.
Well, he's on the main card. He's ranked, I think.
I don't think so.
Number 13 in the official ranking, so he is ranked.
He's got 18 wins.
He beat Brad Tavares, who's pretty good. He lost to Luke Rockhold, who's not a. Who's not
no slouch.
A slouch, as we all know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he lost to Luke Rockhold, who's no slouch. He beat CB Dolloway, who's no slouch. He lost to Mark Munoz, who is no slouch, and lost to Costas Philippou, who is no slouch. He beat Hector Lombard, who is really good. Yushin Okami, he beat. He beat Nick Ring, who is okay. He beat Kendall Grove.
Are we going to go through his entire thing?
Well, no, I'm just going down to the last guy that beat him that was pretty good. And that was Phil Davis, and Phil Davis is pretty good. So he's beaten a lot of really good guys. The fact of the matter is that if he loses, I mean, it's his fourth loss in six fights. Not the worst. I mean, could be better, but not necessarily the worst thing looking at the guys he's lost to.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, how about Jordan Mayne? Who's he fighting?
Thiago Alves.
Okay.
Be a good fight.
I don't know much about Jordan Mayne. I know about Thiago Alves, though.
Jordan Mayne, I've watched him a couple of times, and he looks good. I think it could be a good fight. I think this could be a coming back party for Thiago Alves if he wins, which would be good.
Yeah.
Because if I remember... When's the last time he won?
Thiago Alves?
Yeah, he hasn't been on. I haven't watched him on a card in a while.
Last time Thiago Alves won
was in Brazil.
Was in Brazil?
Yeah,
I believe so.
I remember it was in Brazil. I just don't remember who it was against. That guy. Okay, yeah. The guy that I can't pronounce his last name. It's Seth Bezinski.
Oh, Seth Bezinski, yeah.
Yeah. He's pretty good. He lost to Martin Kampmann. He lost to Rick Story, John Fitch. Then he lost to GSP, and losing to GSP, that's not a big deal. You lost to GSP. Big whoop.
Yep.
He beat Jordan Howard. I mean, Thiago Alves, if he wins, that'll be two fights in a row. Get him on a little streak and see where it goes. I think that would be, I think that'd be good because he was a former contender that just, for whatever reason, after he lost to GSP, has never quite been the same.
Yeah. How about Sarah McMahon versus Misha Tate? Sarah McMahon's the favorite here. Negative 152 plus 120 in the odds. What do you think, and who would you bet on?
I wouldn't bet on anybody in this fight because either way it could go. It could go either way. The thing is that Misha Tate's really good. But, I mean, the problem is that these two fighters are both extremely talented. I think, I mean, both of them I'm pretty sure have lost to Ronda.
Yes.
Let's see.
Is there a shorter list of people that haven't lost to Ronda than there is people who have?
She lost in a minute and 6 seconds.
Yeah, Sarah McMahon lost due to body punches.
Who lost that fight where Rousey just basically, like, they took a step towards each other and she just clocked her?
That would be Alexis Davis.
I don't remember
Davis.
Who it was, but I remember
and
that
she,
one clear
it wasn't, a, it wasn't that she clocked her. She got her in a scarf hold and just kept on beating her face.
Well, no, she was out before they ever hit the ground.
Right, yeah.
That was due to the judo throw, wasn't it?
No, she was out from the knee.
That's what I meant.
Because Alexis Davis ate a knee to the face, and then Ronda, and this is from Ronda herself, she was out when I hit her in the face with a knee, but the ref didn't stop it, so I threw her down and kept punching her to make the ref stop the fight.
Oh, my gosh.
So Ronda basically said, if I
there's your killer instinct.
If I would have let go, she would have hit the ground and would have been unconscious from the first knee that hit her in the dome. So, I mean, she was out cold. Before,
to the head.
Just yes, I get that reference, sir.
I don't even know where it's from. I just
it's from
it's,
an, it's from an old cartoon.
Okay.
I think it might have been from it's an old, like, lawyer cartoon, but they end up in a thing where the guy's just like, boot to the head, and just throws a boot at the dude's head. It's hilarious. It's funny.
Okay, we're getting off topic here.
It. Oh, yeah. Because that matters.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think, I don't know. Misha Tate, I'll give the edge to Misha Tate. I think she's, I don't know, I think she's hungry to get a win and get back after trying to chase a title if she'll ever get another title shot. Depends on if somebody can beat Ronda.
All right.
I don't know. Kat Zingano's the biggest test for Ronda, but I think she'll win that one as well.
Ronda,
okay,
I
on
think,
to the Super Bowl.
I argue Ronda's the best pound-for-pound fighter in the UFC, so...
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a tough test for Kat Zingano.
Mm-hmm. Okay, on to the Super Bowl now.
All right, so we transition now from one desert location in Las Vegas, Nevada, to another in Glendale, Arizona, where...
Not too far apart, are they?
Well... Yeah, they're several hours. But University of Phoenix Stadium, this year's site of the biggest football game in the history of Western civilization, according to – I can't credit that quote because I don't know who said it, but it's one of my favorite quotes of all time. I heard it in their own words one time. But anyway, one of those classic NFL films projects. So we're going to go through this – so should we start at the most important position in the game, quarterback? So I guess the biggest thing with the quarterback, because it's one of the most compelling matchups in a very compelling overall matchup, it's Tom Brady, the future Hall of Famer, against not only the Seahawks pass rush, but on the other sideline is the athleticism, the leadership, and the young up-and-comer, or some have already arrived, Russell Wilson. And say all you want about the defensive help he gets and the team around him that's really good. Yes, that is totally warranted. But Russell Wilson, the amount of moxie he showed and the amount of mental toughness he showed in the NFC Championship game is something that's going to go down in history as something as pretty admirable, I would say.
I disagree because I don't think Russell Wilson would have been in a spot to do a lot if it wasn't for Marshawn Lynch. I think if it wasn't for Marshawn Lynch, you wouldn't have seen that out of – because Marshawn Lynch brought the swag back to that team. Marshawn Lynch brought it. He busted out some big runs, took a lot of the weight off Russell Wilson, and really brought the fire back to that team. I think In that win, I would argue Marshawn Lynch was more important to getting that team's fire back than Russell Wilson was.
Well, yeah, and I would
– And that's the thing is Russell Wilson might have showed a lot of character after the game and trying to keep his composure. But, you know, I know I personally know the guy who has been called by coaches that have had him to be a guy that doesn't respond to throwing interceptions, who then in a rivalry game in college football – threw like four interceptions and had a fumble. And that, of course, is the quarterback for the Montana State Bobcats. And
because
I went to high school with him, I know the guy personally. And the thing is that no matter how hard they try and hide it, that they are bothered by it. And that is a problem.
I get that. But what I'm saying is...
Hang on. Is that you've got Russell Wilson that everybody's like, well, he showed tremendous, you know, composure and stuff. Well, it wasn't until, you know, really into overtime that you saw Russell Wilson kind of reawaken, because he wasn't playing well in the first part of the game before the interceptions were thrown. And then he started having problems. He did not have a good game, and if it wasn't for Marshawn Lynch, we wouldn't be talking about Russell Wilson having moxie or having, you know, tremendous composure, in my opinion.
Well, he lost it at the end, obviously. He was overcome with emotion.
Well,
that's a moment that will go down in history and already has as just a iconic NFL playoff game. So what were you going
to
say, Brandon?
I just wanted to say that Russell Wilson has no wide receivers. They should try to see if they should have seen if Richard Sherman could play on the offensive side of the ball, but now that his arm is hurt, he probably shouldn't play on the offensive side of the ball. He has torn ligaments in his elbow, so, you know, there's an argument to be made that he probably shouldn't even be playing in this game.
Well, the running back position we kind of skipped over, and that's... let's be honest, Marshawn Lynch... is the superior back. And, I mean, there is a case to be made that maybe not first in line, but he'll be in line for the Hall of Fame when it's all said and done. LeGarrette Blount, that's not even an argument for him, really. But, I mean, he has been a very good – he's played the role that the Patriots have asked him to play as far as being that big back that wants to – when they want to impose their will, he's their go-to guy. And that's fine. But Lynch is clearly – I would say that the Seahawks have the clear advantage at the running back position. And then the wide receiver tight end core, the Patriots have it mostly because of one player, Gronk.
Well, okay, let's back up for a second.
Okay.
So – and this is not something I'd even considered till earlier today. I watched part of ESPN First Take for all of about 5 minutes. They talked about LeGarrette Blount potentially being a Super Bowl MVP candidate.
With Otis Anderson.
That he very well could be. So here's my case in point here. That you've got, you know, Marshawn Lynch is obviously a guy that could win that MVP award, but that if you're talking about a guy on the Patriots and they're giving a lot of stock into LeGarrette Blount, saying that Marshawn Lynch is clearly the better back is underplaying how talented LeGarrette Blount could be.
He's a good athlete, yes.
And could make an impact on this game, possibly even bigger than Marshawn Lynch.
Right.
And that's what I'm saying. Marshawn Lynch might be the better running back. Okay, I'll give you that one. But saying that he is clearly going to have an advantage, I don't necessarily agree with.
And
this is the other thing, is that where LeGarrette Blount gets scary from is because that passing attack, because of Gronk, Edelman, Amendola, and Brady, is scary. So they hand the ball off when you're expecting them to pass, and that's scary. So the Patriots can set up the run well. Well, so do the Seahawks, because they use the run of Russell Wilson to set up the run of Marshawn Lynch. So the problem here is that you've got at the running back position, this could be a real battle on who actually sets up the.
No, it totally could be.
And I think downplaying, you're not. I just think that you got to give LeGarrette Blount some credit.
I would agree,
because he has turned his kind of career around a little bit since going to New England.
When he's in New England, his career is good. Like that. That's just historically accurate. And I would agree with you. He's a bulldozer. He is, and he has his backfield mate James Devlin there. Oh, but Shane Vereen, also is will come in to spell him and be like more of the scat back change of pace type guy. And so
Jonas Gray is going to have 6 touchdowns. So you're all forgetting my man, Jonas Gray.
We can't take him out of the game yet.
Has he been active since the Indianapolis
game? No, he hasn't.
Well, yeah, he's played.
Oh, that's true. He did play in the SEC.
He's gotten some snaps, but yeah. Yes. That's what getting late to practice gets you when you're
exactly.
Bill Belichick.
Exactly.
Deflate gate people that are like, they fumble less than every other team. It's because if you fumble, you go to the bench in Bill Belichick's offense.
And you did touch on the blunt on it with your point about LeGarrette Blount. And I'll take it maybe a step further, but and just in a different direction, I guess, from a different angle, in saying that this deflate gate thing, I don't think it's going to be as much of a distraction as it will be a motivation for the New England Patriots as a team, as a whole.
Tom Brady was pissed when he's pissed about it. Legitimately angry.
So is Belichick. So is Kraft.
Everybody's upset.
Yeah, they want an apology for it.
It's going to spark a fire under the New England Patriots. But the problem is, too, is that Seahawks are pretty fired up. Richard Sherman's fired up. Earl Thomas is pretty fired up, as much as Earl Thomas kind of gets fired up, because he's still kind of a...
Apparently he was kind of a jerk at media days, but...
Well, it wouldn't shock me. I mean, I don't get shocked by if people say that NFL players are total jerks, because it doesn't shock me, because there are a lot of them that are. There's a lot of great ones, too, like the Peyton Mannings of the world.
Right, right.
And, you know, there are some great ones.
J.J. Watt.
The J.J. Watts of the world. Yeah, but I mean, it's just – the offensive matchup I think clearly favors the Patriots just because of the weapons that they have. That the real strength for Seattle is Russell Wilson and Marshawn Lynch. And if there's anybody that's going to figure out how to stop that, it's Bill Belichick. Probably the greatest defensive coach the NFL has ever seen.
Well, he's the best coach in the NFL, hands down.
I agree.
Just as far as coming into the game and just in our
except maybe Bruce Arians this year because
Bruce Arians
because
is
he
coach
did a
the
lot
year.
With nothing because everybody was dropping like
here's the thing though, they've struggled against the read option before the Patriots have. They lost to the 49ers, of course, and they've struggled on multiple occasions against the read option run. So they
I would argue though that the them losing to the 49ers though, the 49ers I would argue actually probably have a scarier read option attack than the Seahawks.
Well, especially at
point. And this is why.
Because that was a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and this is the problem. They have wide receivers. Seattle doesn't.
Yeah, they do not. They do not have any wide receivers.
Well, no. I'm not discounting, but they have some pretty dang good wide receivers. You know,
they should. Yeah.
Well, yeah, kind of.
So it's just the thing is though is that the read option against. That and also New England now has a little guy named Darrell Revis on their team. So
little guy,
yeah.
Big check.
Yep, Revis Island.
He's not even little.
Yeah, no.
He's just the best that ever done it in his position.
You can argue that, but I don't know. I think Sherman's better.
Revis Island is still a real thing and has definitely this year been probably the best cornerback in the NFL.
Well, I don't know. I think Richard
Sherman.
Davis had an
argument for that.
Oh, yeah. Vontae Davis looked pretty good this year.
He was looking good.
But Revis Island is still well a thing.
Right.
And the thing is, Darrell Revis is still a monster, and I don't think any of those receivers match up well against Darrell Revis. Mm. So
yep,
that's a problem.
Well, and the number one secondary in the
And then
NFL
they got Brandon
the
Browner,
NFL
too.
Is obviously on the other side. With the Seahawks, and the for most of the especially the regular season, the Patriots were kind of middle of the road as a whole as a secondary, but the defensive portion of this matchup, I mean, you know, because of the historically good defense that the Seahawks have been for the past 2 years, they're overlooking some of people are kind of overlooking the Patriots just as a whole. I mean, their linebacker core isn't really any slouch. I mean, they got Jamie Collins, who had at least 100 tackles this year, and then Dante Hightower and Chandler Jones are pretty good. Like, maybe not underrated, but they're undercovered in the lead up to the Super Bowl so far.
Yeah, I mean, that makes them kind of in a sense underrated though, for this game. Is that they're not even in the same conversation as
Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, that the linebacking core of the Seahawks.
Which, I mean, Bobby Wagner's a stud.
Yes.
KJ Wright's pretty good.
Both went over 100 tackles.
Yeah, but I would argue, I mean, I would almost give – I think Hightower's a monster. You know, I think – I would almost argue he might be better than KJ Wright. I mean, the argument could be made. He's a good linebacker, solid. Mm. Also was considered to be a Pro Bowl snub this year. So there's that. So, you know, he has potential – The Patriots defense also has probably a better coach in terms of just coming up with creative defense. And the same thing on offense, though, is that they do creative things that could really give some, you know, give the Seahawks offense some problems just because of creative play calling and stuff can really make a difference. Look at what the Patriots did to the Ravens. That sparked all that controversy. I mean,
ineligible player substitution thing? Stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, who thinks a crap like that?
Bill Belichick.
Case in point.
Okay, let's give someone else credit here. Someone who else doesn't get enough coverage is their special teams coordinator. I don't even know his name. That's how little he's being covered. And he's gotten this team to play good on special teams, blocking field goals, you know. Getting kick return touchdowns, you know, and those guys, you know, they don't want to be playing special teams. They want to be either starting or doing something.
Well, as far as assistant coaches go, I think the most compelling, at least assistant coach matchup, the head coach in itself matchup in itself with Pete Carroll for the Seahawks, Bill Belichick for the Patriots is compelling in itself. But Dan Quinn, who has a future head coach job in waiting, whether he'll have one or two Super Bowl rings going into it with the Falcons. Yeah. It remains to be seen. But the Josh McDaniels for the Patriots OC and the defensive coordinator Dan Quinn of the Seattle Seahawks, that's going to be very, very compelling as far as a matchup, because that's probably I would say the top two units in this game that's when they're both on the field is the New England Patriots offense against the Seattle defense.
Agreed. And I mean, the thing is too, is that the Patriots defensive coordinator is pretty good too.
Matt Patricia, yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't think of his name, but he's real good too. So this is all around, like, this is a this is an all around, like, one of those Super Bowl battles that you want to see.
Yes.
So
definitely. And the thing about it is, I mean, the trenches, which ultimately is where play starts,
are won and lost.
Where games are won and lost, exactly. And there's a lot more questions, literally and kind of figuratively, for the Seahawks in the trenches, especially along the O-line with a couple guys questionable, a couple key starters questionable along their offensive line. And, you know, the Patriots have their offensive line leader, their center, has a knee injury. He was out for the AFC Championship game. They had to move a former Fresno State Bulldog, Ryan Wendell, inside for the AFC Championship game. That was okay against the Colts, but this is the Seahawks. And as Brandon, you and I have discussed before, they have a mean pass rush. The Patriots have a good pass rush too, but the Seahawks have a mean pass rush waiting for Tom Brady.
That front seven is deadly, and you can't sleep on Seattle's defense.
Nobody
even
is.
Though they have given up a lot of touchdowns to tight ends, that doesn't matter. Their front seven is not to be fooled around on, and don't sleep on them.
Well, nobody will, but the thing is, though, is that tight end thing, that they give up a lot of touchdowns to tight ends, is a little problematic.
Kind of a problem, because New England's leading receiver is arguably the best tight end in the NFL currently.
Well, I don't think there's much of an argument. I think Gronk is an animal. That Jimmy Graham
there.
Is good.
No argument there.
Yeah. But he is, you know, he's not as gigantic as Gronk is. Gronk runs through guys. He breaks tackles. He's a big, monstrous, gigantic behemoth force.
Yep.
Yeah, here's the thing, though, is that some of Seattle's secondary is starting to question, you know, if they get their hands on him, maybe he doesn't catch the ball as well. And
they
have tape on him, and I've seen the tape
well
on him.
Cam Chancellor.
Right.
You have to hit him, and that's the problem.
Yep.
Cam Chancellor is the only guy I think that's going to be able to lay out a hit on him that's going to be big enough to do it. But the thing is that's like – That's sort of the immovable object running into the unstoppable force.
Exactly.
Like they're gonna collide, and something's gonna happen. They could just run into each other and both try and push each other 60 yards downfield, and it won't work.
Yeah, but they're going to try to jam him off the line and try
everybody
to get him
does.
Off his route, which
everybody
has worked in the
ever
past.
Who has
yeah.
ever played against Rob Gronkowski on a football field has tried to jam him off the line.
And it doesn't work. And the thing is who are you going to use?
No, I've seen the tape.
Did you want to jam him with
work.
Cam Chancellor and you move one of your safeties up to jam him?
And you have a Earl Thomas who has a hobbled shoulder back there? I mean,
well, Earl Thomas, even hurt, is still one of the best safeties.
He is. No, he definitely is. And Richard Sherman, even though he's hurt, is a really good corner.
He still took away the second, the other side of the field against the Packers.
Well, the thing is, though, is that
they should have taken shots at Sherman down the stretch.
I don't think they realized he was hurt until they were in the run the ball punt thing.
Well, they shouldn't have ever been in that mode either. Yeah. But we talked about that before.
We talked about that extensively.
Yeah.
Super Bowl.
Yeah, I just mean though, but it's the same same point. But here's the other thing is too is that I think the biggest thing that could be Seattle's downfall is that. They're cocky as opposed to being confident and focused. Because I argue there's a difference.
New England's just flat out pissed off right now.
Well, they're pissed off and they're confident and they're focused on getting a win. Listen, Richard Sherman, I've been watching some interviews with him and some stuff about him, and it's like, and some of their other guys, they aren't coming in like they seem cocky to me as opposed to confident and focused on a goal. There's some of their guys like Russell Wilson that I would argue is confident and focused.
Right.
Marshawn Lynch, confident.
And that was
focused.
The point I was making earlier was the fact that he's always it. He always
yeah,
is.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
why that's why I love him as a leader of men. Like
yeah,
of,
I like Russell Wilson. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Coming from this area where we are, is that like we have a lot of Seahawks bandwagon fans up here. So
yes, we do.
So we hear
also
I get
some
a,
homers.
Yeah,
that we're actual fans. But.
Yeah, but we hear nothing about it. So I'm a little hard on Russell Wilson because I don't buy into the hype and the bandwagon behind him more than anything. But my big point is though is that Richard Sherman basically has told people that he's better than them at life. He told that to like Skip Bayless and to some people, and he just comes off.
That was ridiculous.
And he's like, you're not gonna, you know, you got to test me. You don't test me. I'm better than everybody else. Blah 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 blah. And then
it's annoying.
And then there's guys like Jarrell Revis who don't talk, and they back up their not talking by being better than everybody else.
Yep.
And it's like Sherman talking it up. I think Seattle could overlook the Patriots and just think they're going to steamroll them and walk right by them, or at least some of their guys will, and that could be a problem.
See, yeah, and the thing about – I mean, not to overgeneralize, but sorry, Brandon, you
hold
have
on.
A point.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I don't hold much weight in interviews unless the guy says, oh, I don't really feel confident in my ability to hold up against such and such receiver or something. That, I think, does hold weight. I don't think hold much on Sherman's interviews much because he does like to get in people's heads.
Well, that's basically his goal in general, even on the field. And that's the thing, was the point I was making was not to overgeneralize, but a lot of people talk trash.
Yeah, but
on the field. That's the thing. If you do it in public in the media, after a while it just wears you out. I mean, the example I have in my head right now is Ray Lewis. When he was mic'd up on the field, he would tell you about how he was going to beat you. He would beat you and tell you about how he just beat you. But he would not do it in the media. That's what annoys me.
Well, so here's a good example of a guy that feels this way. Let's talk about our old buddy John Jones for a minute and what happened to him when he fought Alexander Gustafson. He admitted that he got cocky and overlooked him and subsequently got his rear end handed to him for 5 rounds.
If you admit that's honorable.
And sent him to the hospital because he overlooked him because he thought he was the best already.
They both went
to
the
hospital.
Well, yes,
John Jones
just
put
for
a
the
beating
record.
On Gus, no doubt about it. But Gus put a pretty bad beating on John Jones, and John Jones is scared of him to this day. I believe that in my mind. He flat out said he doesn't.
Yeah.
He doesn't. John Jones will not talk about Alexander Gustafson.
Wow.
Will not talk about it. You bring him up, and he goes, "I don't want to talk about him. Move on." Like he's done that in interviews. John Jones is scared of him. Now, let's look at Richard Sherman. He goes in the media, I'm the best all the time. I'm better at life than you. I'm the best. Even though his point to Skip Bayless was also kind of funny because he's like, I'm a Stanford All-Pro graduate.
Blah, 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 blah.
I'm better at life than you.
It's just the thing of tooting your own horn.
I'm cool with anyone ragging on Skip Bayless.
You buy
I'm
into
fine
your own
with
hype.
It.
And I think Sherman's hit that point.
That is valid.
He has bought into his own hype. And the I mean, the Crabtree thing notwithstanding, because that was on the field aggression and anger and emotion.
Yes. Yes.
But everything else he does about being the best, except maybe this really funny commercials he's done about him being the best, has been funny. Those are funny. But he, I think, may have reached a level where he's bought into his own hype. You buy into your own hype, you get complacent, and then you don't play as well because you don't work hard. You don't work hard and you just look past guys. It's like when you – and this is a quote I love and I'm going to steal it from Conor McGregor. He's cocky, he's confident, but he's focused. But he knows that these guys are good and can beat him. So he doesn't look past a guy. He looks through the guy. That he knows he sees his goal. He has to beat this guy, and he trains as hard as he can to get to the goal through the guy rather than past the guy.
I think Richard Sherman does focus a lot. I don't think that he's as – well, he's cocky, obviously. Yep. But I think most of that's just him trying to get into people's heads.
The thing is, though, is that if he's trying to get into people's heads, fine. But there's a level where it gets too far. Because you run into a guy like Tom Brady who doesn't care. Tom Brady is, you know, as a competitor, he's going to throw at you if the guy is open. You know, he's going to be good because he's a great quarterback. The thing is that Sherman can talk.
I love Brady's passion, too.
Yeah, Brady is passionate. He's aggressive. And he's confident. But the thing is, Sherman is cocky. And the thing is that all it takes is for him to get complacent and to buy into his own hype. And then he's going to run into problems.
It sounds like what we want Richard Sherman to do about himself is relax.
Well, not even relax.
The only guy to – here, hold on. The only guy to burn Richard Sherman was Odell Beckham.
Wrong. Dez Bryant did it for an entire game. Oh.
And burn is a relative. I did not see that. On what
Keenan Allen burned him a couple of times.
And that is interesting. And that's what's interesting is because of the skill set of the New England wide receivers, they're kind of small, but they're quick.
Yeah.
And they've got – like that's part of the reason that Edelman was so – in the AFC Championship was so reliable on all those third down conversions and then the fourth down conversion even. It was because he was able to the way the Patriots scheme up ways to get their guys open and have the quick passing game, and they're already hardwired to do that. And yes, the Broncos were last year, but this is a totally different ball game here. But on the flip side of that coin, the Seahawks feel like Aaron Rodgers, in his hobbled state especially, was a good practice for Tom Brady.
Yeah, well, that's Rodgers in his hobbled state.
Yeah, because he was still more mobile than Tom Brady.
He was still in his hobbled state, a lesser quarterback.
He was still more mobile
than
Tom Brady.
What makes Aaron Rodgers scary is not his ability to throw the ball. Well, that is too. His ability to throw the ball with
right, but with the added dimension is
of him being able to get away from you and make crazy things happen is what makes Rodgers scary. Tom Brady's a pocket passer. That's what he does. And so the thing is
he can get out of the pocket and still make plays, though.
Well, yeah. But here's the other thing, though, too, is that they might see Rodgers as good practice. Fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. But the thing is here, too, is that
again,
they have Gronk. They have Gronk. The Packers offense is built around the running game and then long, deep throws to Jordy, Randall Cobb. They don't run short routes, which is what is going to be a very big problem for the Seahawks, because guess what? Short, quick passes, which the Patriots
that
do
is
in
their entire offense.
Is their entire offense and is the wrecker of zone defense, which, mind you, is all Richard Sherman does is play zone defense. So, bad matchup. He's buying into the hype. I think he could be, and that entire team could be in trouble.
How much trouble
okay,
are they in?
How about we get to picks? How about we get to
all
picks
right, how
here?
How much trouble are they in, guys?
I think the Seahawks win. You want to predict the score?
I don't have a score prepared, so no.
Okay, well, I've got... I don't know. I'll go on a score here. I'll say they win 21-17.
I'll go Patriots 24-14. And also, while Kempson's figuring out what he wants to do, Madden simmed the game.
Oh, yeah.
Patriots won 28-24. So, yeah.
Yeah, but they've lost two of their last 10 when they simulate, though.
I mean,
two of the last 10? Or they've won.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that it's a guarantee, though. And it's not a guarantee even that they are 100% correct.
Well, no, I'm just saying that that's what Madden says. It's what Madden thinks. I've been saying for a long time that after it was going to be Green Bay, New England, I thought New England's going to win before they ever sim the Super Bowl. Like, it's just for fun to say, hey, this is what they say.
Right. No, exactly. That's the whole point of Madden simulations is just to... It's yeah. just to be it's not real life. We know that.
Yeah.
So. But then you see all these guys holding a lot of weight, like, oh, the Manatee picked the Patriots to win the Super
Bowl.
He's been right the 10
good fun. That's just all good in good fun to me. Like, for me, that's just all in good fun. Yes, it's they overdo it. I mean, let's be honest, they overdo it.
Yeah, like Bingo the Dog predicts that the Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl. It doesn't mean anything, and I hate it.
I want to know what Punks to 20 Phil has to say about this subject.
Groundhog Day is coming up. All right.
All right.
I do think that this is going to be a low-scoring affair. I think the defenses are going to show up for this one, and it usually happens when – it just in big games, especially.
Here. The over under is 47.5. Do you want to take the over or the
under?
I'll
totally take the under on that one.
Okay, I'll take the under as well.
I'm totally taking the under on the 47 total points for each team. I think it is going to be.
No, for both. It's for both.
Yeah, for both teams combined.
Yeah, it takes. Yeah, for both teams combined.
Yeah.
I thought you said
for
each.
For both teams combined. And I would say. I'm picking the Patriots, and I am picking them to win by one score, and I don't really have a score, like I said, prepared, but I think it is going to be about a 28-20. Like, that sounds good to me, about a 28-24, maybe even lower score than that, because the 28-24 would put them over the 47. So I would say that it's going to be like a 24-20 type of game. It's going to be a really good game. It's already a compelling matchup going in. I think it's going to be a lot more compelling than last year's game, which there's not much it has to do to be more compelling than last year's game. It has to be a game for more than 12 seconds.
Well, thing was that last year's game was the same story, though, as everybody was. This is going to be it's the best offense in the league versus the best defense. That was all we heard last year.
I know.
That's the most compelling thing ever. So as compelling as this sounds,
but even in the
potential.
Lead up, my thing in the lead up, I was not prepared. I didn't quite follow through on saying the Seahawks are going to completely dismantle the Broncos, but I did say I think the Broncos I think the Seahawks are going to win by at least double digits is what was my final diagnosis of last year, but I did not expect that.
Well, I
Kempson, can you get your score out already?
I just gave you a
Come
score.
Come up with
I
a
said
score,
they
man.
They're going to win by a touchdown.
You said by what? Could you please get a score specifically, please?
That's 40.
Oh, 24-20.
So
I didn't hear
under.
You.
24-20, 27-20.
Yeah, 44. That's
like
under.
That, I think it's especially early on.
Okay.
Because both these teams are really, really good at second half adjustments. I think most of the offense is going to be after the intermission. And, I think it's going to be one of those games where it's like 7-7 at halftime. Not because it's a boring game necessarily, but just because it's going to be a really good one. And this is a healthy Gronk. That's one thing too. Is it's a healthy Gronk, and that's going to make a difference. It may be. I think it is being which everything is overblown going into this game. But sorry, I kind of cut you off what you're saying.
Oh, it's all good. I just think that healthy Gronk's a huge thing.
Yep.
And I think as much as people want to be, well, it's overblown Gronk's impact.
Right. Well, can it be? That's a good question.
The thing is, though, is that Gronk is that kind of player that is like you get him the ball and he's going to make things happen.
Okay, guys. It's time to GIF the C, go in for the close. So the predictions for this Super Bowl is JT thinks 24-14. I think 21-17, for the Seahawks to win. And Kempson says 24-20.
Patriots.
Yeah. And I'm
for the Patriots. Yeah.
I'm also.
And you said
Patriots.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, that was a fun podcast. You guys can follow us at at ChampionSports5 on Twitter, at TheDangerZoneMT for JT, at Kempson Cross, and at LeeBrandon523. Thank you guys for listening, the five people that probably did. Thank you guys.
Enjoy the Super Bowl. Enjoy enjoy UFC 183. Everybody have a fun weekend celebrating with family, friends, whatever you're doing, but have a safe weekend as well.
And thanks for enjoying my festival of stupidity. Thank you. Hi, guys. It's Brandon again. I just wanted to say one last thing. Please, if you have any feedback for us, we would enjoy that. Send us some emails at championsportscast@gmail.com. We also appreciate it if you commented and rated our podcast. That'd be great. Thank you. And enjoy everything. Just have a good weekend. And try not to get in trouble. Peace.